The only one that hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Anna Mateo. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, scientists have known for decades that the numbers of some shark species are decreasing. But a new study shows just how severely worldwide populations have dropped in the past 50 years. The numbers of oceanic sharks and rays fell more than 70% worldwide between 1970 and 2018. The information comes from a study that appeared recently in the publication Nature. Stuart Sandin is a marine biologist who works at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography. He says that sharks are great hunters, fast swimmers, and have extraordinary senses. Sandin adds that they can identify any changes in the ocean from a great distance, such as smells or tiny changes in water flow. Their ability to quickly sense anything outside the norm in their environment helps them find food in the open ocean. But it also makes them especially at risk in the face of increased international fishing pressure. You drop a fishing line in the open ocean, and often it's sharks that are there first, whether or not they're the primary target, said Sandin. 24 of the 31 species of sharks and rays are threatened with extinction. Three species, oceanic white-tip sharks, scalloped hammerhead sharks, and great hammerhead sharks, are considered critically endangered. Nathan Pecoraro is a biologist at Simon Fraser University in Canada and one of the writers of the study. He said, "The last 50 years have been pretty devastating for global shark populations. Sometimes sharks are caught on purpose by fishing boats, but more often they are caught while fishing for other species, such as tuna and swordfish. Sharks and rays are both fish with skeletons made of cartilage, not bone. Unlike most other kinds of fish, they are not able to reproduce for several years and also produce fewer young." Pecoraro said sharks reproduce more like mammals than fish, so their populations cannot replenish as quickly as many other kinds of fish. The number of fishing boats in the open ocean has risen sharply since the 1950s. Climate change and pollution also place shark survival at risk. But increased fishing pressure is the greatest threat for every oceanic shark species. Stuart Pym is an ecologist at Duke University and was not involved in the study. He said the removal of top hunters like sharks from the ocean affects all sea life. Sharks are like the lions, tigers, and bears of the ocean world, and they help keep the rest of the ecosystem in balance, Pym said.
The World Health Organization team investigating the origins of the coronavirus pandemic has visited two disease control centers in China. The team visited the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in the central province of Hubei on Monday. The investigators also visited the CDC office in Hubei's capital of Wuhan, where the coronavirus was first identified in late 2019. No details about the visits were released to the media. But WHO team member Peter Daszak told reporters the Hubei CDC visit had been a very good meeting, really important. The WHO experts began their investigative work in China last week. They have also visited a seafood market where early coronavirus cases were found and hospitals where the first patients were treated. The team is hoping its investigation into the origins of the coronavirus will help prevent similar worldwide health crises in the future. The scientists are seeking to find out exactly where the virus started. Genetic sequencing shows that the coronavirus started in bats and likely jumped to another animal before infecting humans. Health experts say the search for answers about the origins is likely to take years. The outbreak in China led to the worldwide coronavirus pandemic. The Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center reported on Monday there have been more than 103 million infections worldwide. More than 2.2 million people have died, the center said. The U.S. leads the world in the number of coronavirus cases, with more than 26 million. India follows with 10.7 million, while Brazil is third with 9.2 million cases. The U.S. has the highest number of deaths at 441,000. Brazil has reported more than 224,000 deaths, while Mexico has about 158,000 and India 154,000. China has repeatedly blocked independent reports about the spread of the disease at home and published little information on its research into the origins of the virus. China has also suggested that the virus could have started in another country. I'm Brian Lin.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. During the COVID-19 pandemic, pets have only become more important. They have added enjoyment and humor to lives lived indoors. And they keep us company. However, as more people are still working from home, because of health restrictions, the animals they keep are introducing new problems too. But first, let's talk about the good side. For many dogs, the quarantine may seem perfect. Their humans are around all the time, or as we say, 24/7. So there might be more time for walks and more treats. Sleeping on the bed at night? Not a problem. Cats, however, are more complex. Many cats are already experts at social distancing and may be hoping for the pandemic to end soon. They may need more me time. Then again, some other cats may have changed during the pandemic. They may want more attention. For example, take Kate Hilt's cat named Potato. Potato loves to interrupt Zoom work calls by jumping on Hilt's lap. Hilt is a technology advisor in the Washington, D.C. area. She told the Associated Press that she has found a way to solve the problem. She puts the cat on her lap before the call. This way, Potato is already asleep during her work call. Dogs, however, are used to having all the attention and may not want to share it with their owner's computer. Olivia Heinerfeld is a student at Georgetown University Law School. Her dog, Lincoln, gets upset about the attention she gives to her video conference calls. To get that attention back, Lincoln drops his dirtiest, smelliest toy ball into her lap during her work calls. Speaking of cats, Learning English writer and English teacher Alice Bryant says her cat is not very affectionate. But having a cat during the pandemic provides her and her boyfriend with humor and entertainment.
We make up funny songs for everything the cat does. For instance, she likes to go in and out of rooms a lot. So my boyfriend made a song about that. When I'm cooking and she's hanging out in the kitchen with me, I sometimes sing cat songs to her.
For dogs and cats, the pandemic has been a chance to teach humans a thing or two about themselves. Candace Crony is a professor of animal behavior at Purdue University in the state of Indiana. She told the Associated Press that during the pandemic, our pets are around us now 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's quite a lot. Crony has learned new things from her pets during the pandemic. She said she has learned more about how they interact with each other. Extra time with her dog and cat has also taught her how to better understand them. She adds that she finds this funny. These are the things she tells others to do. It took a pandemic for her to take her own advice. Not all the changes during the pandemic have been good. Some pets may be becoming even more dependent on their owners. Take, for example, Learning English's Ashley Thompson and her dog, Dublin. For those who have seen Let's Learn English, you may remember Dublin. Ashley says that Dublin has changed in one big way during the pandemic.
Dublin no longer knows how to be left alone at home. Thankfully, I don't leave the house much these days except to take him on walks. But if he ever does get left behind, I'm pretty sure he barks nonstop.
Veterinarians and owners report some pets are being given medicine for anxiety. Other pets are being put on diets because of too many treats. Some are not getting enough exercise in parks because their owners are avoiding public places. Kirsten Hedges is an herbalist in Decatur, Georgia. She explores how plants can treat illness. She told the AP that her dog, Bitsy, misses attention from other humans on their walks. She said her dog would get upset because no one would talk to him or pet him. People would stay socially distanced from him. Hedges added that trips to the doctor have been really scary for the rescue dog because of the face masks and lack of touch. However, Hedges and other pet owners say their animals provide emotional support to their humans. As humans begin to return to work and vaccines become available, this year likely will bring a test of those relationships and new behaviors. Crony, the animal behavior expert, said she worries what will happen when she returns to work, and not only for her pets. "I'm starting to worry a little bit for me," she admits. "I'm becoming a little codependent on my animals." And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The 1920s are remembered as a quiet period in American foreign policy. The nation was at peace. Americans elected three Republican presidents in a row: Warren Harding, Calvin Coolidge, and Herbert Hoover. These conservatives in the White House were generally more interested in economic growth at home than in relations with other countries. But the United States had become a world power. It was tied to other countries by trade, politics, and shared interests. And America had gained new economic strength. Bob Doty and Shirley Griffith discuss American foreign policy during the 1920s.
Before World War I, foreigners invested more money in the United States than Americans invested in other countries, about $3 billion more. The war changed this. By 1919, Americans had almost $3 billion more invested in other countries than foreign citizens had invested in the United States. American foreign investments continued to increase greatly during the 1920s. Increased foreign investment was not the only sign of growing American economic power. By the end of World War I, the United States produced more goods and services than any other nation, both in total and per person. Americans had more steel, food, cloth, and coal than even the richest foreign nations. By 1920, the United States' national income was greater than the combined incomes of Britain, France, Germany, Japan, Canada, and 17 smaller countries. Quite simply, the United States had become the world's greatest economic power.
America's economic strength influenced its policies toward Europe during the 1920s. In fact, one of the most important issues of this period was the economic aid the United States had provided European nations during World War I. Americans lent the Allied countries $7 billion during the war. Shortly after the war, they lent another $3 billion. The Allies borrowed most of the money for military equipment and food and other needs of their people. The Allied nations suffered far greater losses of property and population than the United States during the war. And when peace came, they called on the United States to cancel the loans America had made. France, Britain, and the other Allied nations said the United States should not expect them to repay the loans.
The United States refused to cancel the debts. President Coolidge spoke for most Americans when he said simply, "They borrowed the money." He believed the European powers should pay back the war loans, even though their economies had suffered terribly during the fighting. However, the European nations had little money to pay their loans. France tried to get the money by demanding payments from Germany for having started the war. When Germany was unable to pay, France and Belgium occupied Germany's Ruhr Valley. As a result, German miners in the area reduced coal production. And France and Germany moved toward an economic crisis and possible new armed conflict.
An international group intervened and negotiated a settlement to the crisis. The group provided a system to save Germany's currency and protect international debts. American bankers agreed to lend money to Germany to pay its war debts to the Allies. And the Allies used the money to pay their debts to the United States.
Some Americans with international interests criticized President Coolidge and other conservative leaders for not reducing or canceling Europe's debts. They said the debts and the new payment plan put foolish pressure on the weak European economies. They said this made the German currency especially weak, and they warned that a weak economy would lead to serious social problems in Germany and other countries. However, most Americans did not understand the serious effect that international economic policies could have on the future of world peace. They believed that it was wrong for the Europeans, or anyone, to borrow money and then refuse to pay it back.
Many Americans of the 1920s also failed to recognize that a strong national military force would become increasingly important in the coming years. President Coolidge requested very limited military spending from the Congress. And many conservative military leaders refused to spend much money on such new kinds of equipment as submarines and airplanes. Some Americans did understand that the United States was now a world power and needed a strong and modern fighting force. One general, Billy Mitchell, publicly criticized the military leadership for not building new weapons. But most Americans were not interested. Many Americans continued to oppose arms spending until the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor in Hawaii in 1941.
American policy toward the League of Nations did not change much in the 1920s. In 1919, the Senate denied President Wilson's plea for the United States to join the new League of Nations. The United States, however, became involved unofficially in a number of League activities, but it continued to refuse to become a full member. And in 1930, the Senate rejected a proposal for the United States to join the World Court. The United States also continued in the 1920s to refuse to recognize the communist government in Moscow. However, trade between the Soviet Union and the United States increased greatly during this period. And such large American companies as General Electric, DuPont, and RCA provided technical assistance to the new Soviet government.
The Coolidge administration was involved actively in events in Latin America. Secretary of State Charles Evans Hughes helped several Latin American countries to settle border disputes peacefully. In Central America, President Coolidge ordered American Marines into Nicaragua when President Adolfo Diaz faced a revolt from opposition groups. The United States gave its support to more conservative groups in Nicaragua, and it helped arrange a national election in 1928. American troops stayed in Nicaragua until 1933. However, American troops withdrew from the Dominican Republic during this period. And Secretary of State Hughes worked to give new life to the Pan-American Union.
Relations with Mexico became worse during the 1920s. In 1925, Mexican President Plutarco Elias Calles called for laws to give Mexico more control over its minerals and natural wealth. American oil companies resisted the proposed changes. They accused Calles of communism, and some American business and church leaders called for armed American intervention. However, the American Senate voted to try to settle the conflict peacefully. And American diplomat Dwight Morrow helped negotiate a successful new agreement.
These American actions in Nicaragua and Mexico showed that the United States still felt that it had special security interests south of its border. But its peaceful settlement of the Mexican crisis and support of elections in Nicaragua showed that it was willing to deal with disputes peacefully. America's policies in Latin America during the 1920s were in some ways similar to its policies elsewhere. It was a time of change, of movement, from one period to another. Many Americans were hoping to follow the traditional foreign policies of the past. They sought to remain separate from world conflict.
The United States, however, could no longer remain apart from world events. This would become clear in the coming years. Europe would face fascism and war. The Soviet Union would grow more powerful. And Latin America would become more independent. The United States was a world power, but it was still learning in the 1920s about the leadership and responsibility that is part of such power.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.